Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Yusuf Dahl, and when I was 18, I was convicted of selling drugs. For the past 3 years, I've had difficulty finding housing because it is legal in the United States to discriminate against individuals that have a past drug distribution conviction on their record for life. It doesn't matter if it was a hard drug like heroin or a drug that's now legal or partially legal in many states across the country, like marijuana. The Thurman Amendment was introduced to the Fair Housing Act in 1988 by segregationist Strom Thurmond, and it's since been used to deny housing to all people. But because people of color are disproportionately jailed for drug charges, we are affected more. My goal is to overturn this amendment to start an end to housing discrimination that unfairly targets people of color. If you would like to join this movement, please visit ThurmanAmendment.org to learn more.
A message from the Fable and Folly Network.
Hey there. This is Chris Kaella, writer, director, and producer of Dirt, an audio drama. Welcome to this bonus director's commentary episode. I'll use this time to go into things like where and how specific sound effects were created, what inspired certain scenes or character interactions, the recording process, both for background sounds and actors' voices, and in some cases, how things changed during production from my original script, and, I guess, pretty much anything else that comes to mind that I think might be interesting. For this commentary episode, I've chosen Chapter 8. As I've said elsewhere, I absolutely love every episode of Dirt, but Chapter 8 is really special to me because it's where, while I was building content for Season 2, I really started to feel like I was getting back into my groove as a producer and sound designer. A lot goes on in Chapter 8, yet strangely, it was probably the easiest one for me to put together. From the dialogue to the background sound effects to the music, everything just seemed to flow into place on the first or second try, which in my experience doesn't happen very often. So, let's get started. Call Kim. The chapter opens with Joseph driving away from the small town of PL, not far from the Pacific coast in southwest Washington.
Hi. Hey, can I call you back in a bit?
Sure. In real life, PL really does factor into my family history. My grandparents lived there briefly as a young married couple, and my dad, their oldest child, was born there. They didn't stay in PL for very long, unlike Carl, who's a lifer. But I thought the tie-in would be fun to use for the story, even though the story is, of course, completely made up. As he seems to do after nearly every milestone in his treasure hunt, Joseph calls Kim to debrief after finding a treasure box in PL. Only this time, when Joseph needs her, Kim has her hands full with a family event at her kid's school. Up to this point, Joseph has gotten pretty much whatever he needs from the other characters in the story. And people pretty much do whatever he asks at work. So here, with the mystery starting to consume Joseph at a deeper level, I thought having Kim be busy would serve as a good reminder to Joseph that he isn't always at the center of everyone's world. Even though, when Kim tells him she's been too busy to text and then asks if she can call him back later, he presses on with his news anyway.
I'd forgotten all about it.
You should look it up when you get home. You still have your copy?
I do, somewhere. I've been meaning to dig it up since you... Okay, shh. Just a minute longer. Mom's talking to Uncle Joseph.
I just love the way that Kim alternates between speaking to Joseph directly during the call and appeasing her kids on the side. Jeannie Leslie, who plays Kim, delivered the lines with such skill, talking directly into the mic when addressing Joseph and then turning her head to the side to address her character's kids. She totally got into it, and I think it resulted in a realistic-sounding phone conversation with a very busy mom.
Yeah, I haven't read the note yet. I had to get out of there pretty fast to get away from... Oh, crap.
What?
On the director's commentary episode for Chapter 4, I mentioned glowingly how great of a resource freesound.org is. Both the whoop-whoop and response vehicle noises and the idling diesel engine sound came from there. If you use freesound.org, just make sure you adhere to the attribution license requirements and drop them a donation while you're at it.
Gotta go.
The lights from the vehicle parked behind me are so bright, I can't see anything in my mirrors except the dark outline of somebody walking up to my door.
Thought you could get away that easily, did you?
Joseph's intention was to get away from PL both with a treasure box and anonymity.
Carl, what are you doing? You can't just pull people over for no... What's that? Your fish and wildlife truck?
I had a reason. You were doing 10 over.
He got his first wish, but not the second.
How did you find
Carl that? Seems like the that kind of guy you want to be careful with, especially if you value boundaries. Carl is played by the wonderful Aaron Patterson, who, trivia note, is married to Jeannie Leslie, who I mentioned a moment ago, plays Joseph's sister, Kim. Aaron created the voice for Carl, and while Aaron has lived in Seattle for many years now, every once in a while, in Carl's dialogue, you can hear a little bit of the accent that Aaron grew up with in Mississippi.
So what else do you know about me?
Well, I know you own a big company and are kind of a big shot. I mean, Google made that easy enough to see. Wish I could take weekend trips to Bali. The fishing I could do there.
So what?
Dirt is an audio drama, which spans all kinds of genres. But it's also a science fiction story. Nowhere does that come out more than in the strange behavior of the vintage metal detector that Joseph is lugging around.
I saw what that thing did. That old Coinmaster led you to the spot that you dug up. That ding-dang detector pulled you.
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, come on now. I saw the look on your face when it happened. So tell me, what kind of stuff are you into? UFO technology?
And Carl being Carl, he's fixated on the detector, like a fish chasing a shiny lure. I wanted Carl to be more or less the opposite of Joseph. Carl is from a small town with smaller town values, and he's a bit of a conspiracy nut. He's someone Joseph would probably never associate with, but, as fate would have it, Joseph might, or might not, have to associate with Carl. Good night, Carl.
But wait up.
Maybe I can help you.
Washington State and the Pacific Northwest have always been home to conspiracy lore, from UFO sightings to Bigfoot to extreme secrecy at the Hanford nuclear site in central Washington. There's no shortage of material for people to speculate on. While Carl is open-minded to such things, Joseph is more of a skeptic. Yet he's having to confront some strange truths about the detector, as well as events surrounding the mystery of the letter from Imo, that he doesn't understand.
I wasn't planning to head home anyway, but now that Carl knows where I live, and who knows what else, suddenly, everything feels unsafe.
Joseph is also massively protective of his privacy, not only because of his tech celebrity career, but because of the strange treasure hunt he's now engaged in. So, when he finds out that Carl knows all about him, it sends Joseph further into a paranoid tailspin. And while he loses Carl, he also literally gets lost.
I drive about a quarter of a mile farther down the dirt road, away from the paved road, and kill the engine and turn off the headlights.
Oh.
The area around PL is indeed lonely when you get off the main roads. There are logging roads everywhere that go deep into the woods, and being so close to the coast, it's often overcast and dreary, especially in the fall when the story takes place. I really wanted the narrative to feel like a tightrope balance of Joseph being put in situations by forces just beyond his control, and Joseph putting himself in situations that he has to face up to or try to get himself out of.
Let's at least see where I am. I open up my phone's map app to figure out how to get back to the freeway. And that's when I realize.
Of course.
There's no cell service.
From a sound design standpoint, as I mentioned in the Chapter 4 director's commentary, all of the car sounds you hear in dirt were recorded in my own car, a Subaru Outback. I imagine that Joseph has a much fancier car, but the Outback worked well for the sound effects I needed. I spent a couple of afternoons driving all over my neighborhood in Seattle with my Zoom recorder so I could get the engine accelerating and decelerating and idling noises that I needed. And for realism, I even took special care to record the engine cooling off after one of those drives. And if you listen closely, you can hear that happening at the moment when Joseph first turns off the engine, earlier in this scene.
And now I'm lost. And then there's you. What is the deal with you?
The last couple of minutes of this scene, when Joseph gets the idea to see if the coin master can direct him back to the freeway, was probably the most problematic couple of minutes in the chapter, at least at first. Not so much from a sound mixing standpoint, but rather from a showing versus telling standpoint. I wanted to convey everything that was happening through action instead of narration. Basically, not overexplain. My first draft of the audio did not have Joseph saying,
"Maybe you can direct me out of here."
And when I had my beta listening group of 3 to 4 people, which consists mostly of family members, by the way, listen to the scene and give me feedback, it was clear that not everyone understood what was happening here. They knew Joseph was stuck in the woods and started his car and was trying to get out.
Okay. Which way should I turn onto the road?
But the role of the detector wasn't totally obvious.
How about this way?
So I added in that line just to provide a touch more clarity in that moment about what was really happening. This scene is crucial for further establishing Joseph's relationship with the metal detector and what the detector seems to be able to do. Ha! So thanks to some great feedback and a small fix, I think listeners were able to move forward in the story with that knowledge and understanding.
Whoa!
In my early 20s, when I was visiting Vivian in Portland one time, I asked her.
So having made his way back to the freeway, Joseph is now heading to his next destination. Here he narrates a memory that is really his grandmother's memory. And in real life, it's based on my own grandmother's memory.
She described a wild, surging river that flowed without restraint through the stark desert landscape. A crashing, whitewater beast, especially in places like Celilo, the Dalles, and Kettle Falls.
The raging water sound you hear is not the Columbia River, unfortunately, since there isn't a section of the river that flows naturally like that anymore.
And drown out voices, 100 feet from shore.
The water you hear is actually a recording I made of Snoqualmie Falls, which is about 25 miles east of Seattle, and is a sacred site to the Snoqualmie tribe. It's also a big tourist destination,
and I chose to record there because I knew I would get some muffled talking amongst the raging water noises, which fits perfectly with the theme of Joseph's narration during this segment. I also recorded the Spokane River in downtown Spokane, which goes through a series of plunging falls. But as I listened during editing, the Snoqualmie River recording, it just better matched the soundscape that I was going for. The Columbia River Gorge, which Joseph is driving through at night, forms a good portion of the border between Washington and Oregon. And it's a place that is deeply rooted in my own family history. It's a beautiful place if you get a chance to visit. The geologic history of the area is pretty wild. The Columbia River flows from east to west, from the desert, through the mountains, and to the coast, finally emptying into the Pacific Ocean. And Maryhill, which is a real place on the river, is located on the drier east side of the gorge. For decades, my family gathered there for family reunions, since it was more or less a central meeting point for those coming from Portland, Seattle, Yakima, and Spokane. And it was also the site of the memorial for my own grandfather, Arvo.
I book a room at a motel that has seen better days. But it'll do for tonight. So, you're probably wondering how I knew to go to PL, and why I searched near a water faucet.
The crummy motel that Joseph stays in at Biggs Junction is a motel I've stayed at myself. The background sounds you hear all throughout these scenes, from the semi-trucks barreling down the interstate to the relative quiet of the park and cemetery above Maryhill, were all recorded on-site with my Zoom recorder. I could have fudged it all with recordings made closer to home, but it just felt like a nice touch to make the sound environment as real to the location as possible.
Imo ushered his band students outside for a school picture. Yet before the cameraman could snap the photo, Imo noticed smoke pouring out of the window of the electrical room.
While I do paraphrase some of Arvo's stories in the podcast, such as the stories in Chapter 6 about sailing to Westport, and hitchhiking from Aberdeen to Seattle and back for a music lesson. The tuba fire story that Joseph narrates as he's getting ready for bed in the motel in Biggs is totally made up, as is the places I've been that comes in the next chapter, Chapter 9.
For someone who doesn't live on hunches, I seem to be on a hot streak lately. I'm hoping the hot streak continues in the morning, not far from here.
In Season 2, I wanted to continue the story device of the dream sequences that started in Season 1. But in Season 2, the dreams move into different territory, far more personal territory for Joseph.
I'm in my childhood bedroom. It's dark, except for the nightlight plugged into the wall near me.
From a sound design standpoint, the woodworking and wooden stair sounds were all recorded in my dad's woodworking shop in the Spokane Valley. My dad is the one sawing and sanding and clamping and hammering in the background. We did many takes of all these sounds using my Zoom recorder placed in different locations in his shop, including in a room above the shop, so that the sounds would have a quieter, muffled quality, as if heard from above.
The lights in the house are still on. I walk softly down the hallway, invading a nighttime world that I know isn't meant for me. But right now, the thing I want to see most in the world is in the basement.
We find out later in Season 2, during a conversation between Kim and Joseph, that Joseph's and Kim's childhood bedrooms were right above their dad's shop in the basement, and they would often fall asleep listening to their dad tinker in the shop, late into the evenings, below them, as they fell asleep. All of that imagery was inspired by my own memories of listening to my dad work in his shop below my bedroom at night, in our childhood home.
The thing I want to see the most is right inside this door. All I need to do is open it.
The transistor radio sound and the cuckoo clock and the violin playing
are all there to add a kind of surreal landscape that for me reflects the surreal nature of dreams. My dad had an old transistor radio in a leather case that I remember well, that he would use to listen to music in his shop. The cuckoo clock is the same style of clock that was in my grandparents' home for years and would chime every hour, even in the middle of the night. And the violin, well, that is actually an old recording of Arvo, who was a violinist in the Oregon Symphony Orchestra, in addition to being a music educator, playing his violin at a family gathering in Portland from when I was very young, in the 70s, that my older sister and my cousin happened to capture on cassette tape. It's now Thursday morning in the story, and Joseph is feeling the pressure of the big meeting on Friday with Molecular back in Seattle. But it's clearly not stopping him from pursuing personal needs instead.
Call Kim.
He chats with Kim while driving across the bridge back to the Washington side of the Columbia River.
Hi.
Hey.
You're going over to Maryhill.
Yeah.
Right.
She properly guesses where he's going, and she reveals to him that the costume jaywalker meme is growing in popularity, even to the point of people she knows dressing up in the same costume for Halloween parties.
Looks like you're the hot trend for Halloween this year.
Seriously?
Don't worry. No one pulls it off quite like you, though.
Great.
Oh, I found my copy of Imo Stories last night. The places I've been. Who knew? So, are you going in order? I mean, first PL, then Maryhill, then...
Whoa. When Joseph pulls into the Maryhill State parking lot, he's stunned to see Antonia there.
Whoa.
Yeah. Hey, I'm at the park now. Let me check in again in a bit.
Yeah.
Bye.
Antonia gets out of her white truck and stands next to it.
There's clearly some history there between these two that isn't very well known to us yet. And while it's hinted that Joseph is pretty okay with them renewing their connection, it's hard to know where Antonia stands on the matter, or why she's at the park when he arrives. From a sound design standpoint, I wanted the truck that Antonia drives to feel older. Maybe a bit of reflection of life and work on a farm. I didn't have access to an old truck when I started mixing these scenes, but my old friend freesound.org came through again with some great recordings of older vehicles.
I'm just surprised to see you. You drove down here this morning?
Yeah, it's not far.
Don't you have a business to run? Stuff to, I don't know.
Don't you?
I love how when Joseph asks Antonia why she isn't back home running her business, she gives it right back to him. Antonia has some sass.
I guess that makes two of us. So, do you need help getting anything out of the car, or...?
I was actually just going to walk around for a bit first. It's been a while since I've been here.
Oh. I can just wait here in the truck until you need something.
No. I mean, you came all this way. Might as well join me?
Okay, then.
And if you didn't already know, all of the music in Dirt is original to the podcast.
We walk from the paved lot onto a wide expanse of mowed grass. The lawn is green, despite months of intense heat. Toward the river, tall, leafy trees grow in groves, especially near the water's edge.
This short piano tune, which I recorded in GarageBand, just felt like the right mood setter for Joseph and Antonia walking into the park together. There's a little bit of magic and a little bit of tension to it.
Probably the first place that Antonia and I were ever at together.
It's so weird that he's doing all this.
As I mentioned, The background sounds you hear in this scene and in the next scene were actually recorded at Maryhill State Park and at the small cemetery above the park. We have family who live in Central Oregon, so whenever we drive down there from Seattle, Maryhill and the town of Biggs, where Joseph spent the night the evening before, are stops along the way.
Oh yeah.
It was on one of these recent drives to Oregon that we stopped for a bit, so I could capture the sounds.
At the ramp over there. They spent most of their lives up on the farm, obviously. But this was kind of like their other place.
Huh.
They bought plots at the cemetery years before they died. It always feels weird to me that people plan ahead for that sort of thing.
Same here. Joseph is pretty reserved when they first start talking and walking. But as the conversation and the day go on, he begins to open up more.
Have you been to the cemetery?
Just once, a long time ago.
Hmm. Where's it at?
It's up the hill from here. Not far.
Megan Morales, a friend and coworker, is the amazing voice behind Antonia.
Don't you have stuff to do down here?
I think in this scene, when Antonia and Joseph are alone together in person for the first time in years, since they were teenagers, in fact, Megan did a superb job of capturing that feeling of interest and apprehension.
I'm pretty sure Imo's memorial was at one of these picnic shelters.
And as I said, it's not clear to Joseph why she's here, or what her role might be in the mystery surrounding Imo's letter.
I mean, I guess we could go up there.
Megan really got into the role and took direction so well. But she added so much of her own thoughts and feelings and independence to the character as well.
Put things in perspective.
Okay. I'll drive?
Sure.
You know, when I got to your farm the other day and got to that security gate, when did you have that put in, by the way?
About 5 years ago.
This little bit of throwback to Chapter 3 I thought was nice to include here just to tie up the small mystery of how Joseph's keyword at the security gate, Lucilla, ended up working and why.
I mean, I only had a 1 in 10,000 chance of getting it right.
I think it also tightens the bond between these two just a teeny bit more when we find out here that Joseph remembered and offered Antonia's middle name to get into the farm.
So I was already out of sorts. And then when he asked me for a keyword, I fumbled around for a bit and thought for sure I was a goner. But then the only thing that came to mind that wasn't a dumb guess was your middle name. But I didn't remember until a second ago that that was your grandmother's name too. You to die for.
So this cemetery, located above the Columbia River with a sweeping view of the surrounding landscape, is a real place. Three highways converge here, plus some frequently used train tracks that run along the river. So there's kind of a persistent background hum to the place. The gate sound isn't from here, though. The Maryhill Cemetery does have a metal gate, but the sound it makes while opening and closing just didn't work very well for this moment. So I found and used a different gate recording instead.
Mel, hey, what's up?
Quite a bit. You alone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Joseph is expecting a full rundown from his assistant, Mel, played by the awesome Jesse Brown, concerning work matters, as well as a background check that he asked her to run on Antonia's father, Salvador. She doesn't disappoint.
I was going to do that.
Angela's basically taking over. I mean, I'd say she's doing it respectfully. Everyone knows you're out for personal reasons, and so they're trying not to bug you, her especially. But, you know, nothing brings out initiative in people like a perceived leadership gap at a time of crisis.
I think they like her.
The Germans?
Yeah. There's a lot of information conveyed here that advances the plot. I recorded Jesse saying her lines for this scene in a spare room in my house, which is where I recorded nearly everyone who appears in Dirt. The trick, of course, was getting her voice to sound like it's on the telephone and being heard in Joseph's left ear.
So, the next thing. Turns out we're not the only ones who want the traffic cam footage from Monday. My contact at Lincod tells me the police are after it now, too.
The police?
Apparently, the driver behind
It's really easy to go too far with telephone filters and panning effects. I tried many different levels for each until I landed on what felt like the right sound for her voice.
And because of the media frenzy, her lawyer is taking advantage of it. It'll probably be in the news later. But also, not only are the police obtaining the footage, they're aware that we asked for it already. I think our story is holding up, but I'd say we're pretty freaking under the microscope now.
Oh.
And Jesse delivered all these lines so great. She really owns and captures that unique combination of cool, bossy, stylish, motherly, highly capable, and loyal qualities that I was going for when writing Mel's character.
There's an R.A. Hastings on the board of Memphis Labs. Isn't that the company your sister works at?
You mean as a partner at? Yeah. What does Kim know?
Joseph takes in the news that Mel shares with him, bit by bit. But things take a downward turn when it's revealed to Joseph that his sister, Kim, might have a connection to the Flores farm that goes beyond simple family memories. In Joseph's heightened semi-paranoid state, it unnerves him to hear this. Joseph already has doubts about Salvador, and might have doubts about Antonia, too.
Troubling.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't tell.
And now, doubts about his sister are creeping in. Much of season two is about Joseph's trust, or growing lack thereof, in the people around him.
But that's not all.
I was kind of hoping it would be.
Now, this is just my interpretation of what I'm seeing. But we both know I'm pretty much right about these things.
Toward the end of this phone conversation, things take an even more downward turn when Mel tells him that a drone was flying over him in Seattle when he almost got hit in the crosswalk.
But it's clearly there in all of them.
Sorry about that. Any luck?
Yeah, they're right here.
After the call ends, Joseph walks over to Antonia, who has just found the headstones for her grandparents. But something isn't right. Antonia seems to be looking around for something, which Joseph then also realizes is the sound of a drone hovering overhead.
What is that?
A faint buzzing noise. And then, barely visible against the blue expanse, a tiny black dot. We both stare up in the air and then exchange glances. She obviously sees something on my face because she says,
"Whoa, you look worried."
I really wanted the end of this chapter to be a defining moment for Antonia, where we learn just a little bit more about her through her actions.
I don't know for sure, but it's possible I'm being followed.
Without a word, Antonia quickly walks out of the cemetery. I can see her looking for something behind her driver's seat. I look back up and see the black dot hovering high overhead.
From a sound design standpoint here, the drone and the rifle sounds both came from freesound.org. But the drone crash landing sound is actually something I recorded in our backyard with my Zoom recorder. I filled up my laptop tote bag with several kitchen utensils and then threw it up into the air so it would make a cool impact sound when it landed.
Whoa!
I should note, no kitchen utensils were injured in the recording of this sound effect.
How did you...
We should get out of here. Before someone comes looking for it.
Well, that's the end of the director's commentary for Chapter 8. I hope you found this bonus episode entertaining and informative. If you have any questions about any behind-the-scenes stuff, feel free to ask on Twitter. We're at Dirt Audio Drama. Stay tuned for more bonus content like this in the near future. And thank you very, very much for listening to Dirt, an Audio Drama.
Dirt, an Audio Drama, is a production of Studio 5705.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Oh, hey, friends, it's me, your Dungeon Master, Russ Moore. You don't know me, but I'm going to introduce you to Dungeons & Dragons, where I play D&D with my friends. And they're going to become your friends because
you're going to love us so much. I mean, maybe you won't love us, but we'll love you.
Let me give you a taste of the show in 42 seconds. Let's go.
You must have a flask.
He's got a satchel.
That was the most disappointed way I've ever heard anyone say the word satchel.
How much is a donkey cost?
Russ, how much is a donkey cost?
The question everyone wants to know.
For 1 hour.
It's concentration, so if you do another concentration spell.
It's abjuration, you doink.
It's concentration.
I mean, that sounds like exactly the sort of person you should probably tell your friends about. The kind that are there and say, like, weird, mysterious things and then just disappear?
Yeah, that's why I'm telling you.
Okay.
Also, he had 3 eyes.
Oh!
We're having this rager. I mean, Lich Astley and the Magic Missiles is going to be playing later tonight.
Is he ever going to give you up?
Never going to give you up. Never going to let you down. Orcus is going to rule all and he won't desert you. What else do I need to tell you? We're Dungeons & Dragons. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts or at dumbdragons.com. We can't wait to adventure with you.